Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast. Along with J.J. Cooper, I am the convalescing John Manuel. Thank you so much for joining us here, whether you're downloading us on iTunes or baseballamerica.com. Of course, you can follow us. Our Twitter feed is at twitter.com/baseballamerica. And I think we're around right around 4,000 followers on Twitter, so join the revolution and follow us on Twitter.
Tweet.
And this is a very good time to do that, J.J., because we are going to have a lot of updates. As we're recording this on Wednesday morning, Friday is the trade deadline, a non-waiver trade deadline. And it is a kind of a there's a lot of talk about this next song. Now, there's a lot of talk about this trade deadline, maybe a little too much talk, because right now there hasn't been really a whole lot of action.
Actually, good story in USA Today, I think yesterday, was talking about that there's so much talk now that it actually gets in the way of trades being made.
I'm sure it does.
Because... teams, 10 years ago, teams really could do this somewhat in a vacuum, and as they did it, you know, you have a Gammons rumor out there you might see on ESPN Diamond Notes back then,
right.
You know, where they would, you know, but beyond that, there wasn't that much of a, there was rumors out there, but not nearly like there are now, but beyond that, there also wasn't the reaction that there is now. Like,
I really do think some of these trade rumors get floated by clubs as trial balloons. I mean,
and want to see what the reaction,
that's
like,
right. Which is kind of crazy. But what do they really care, in a way, how fans react?
But at the same time, they, you know, but, and you see it now, like, I do believe the Royals are somewhat shocked, you know, like,
by how
Joe Posnanski put it pretty well, you know, by that trade, like, wait, not, everyone is, you know, ripping this trade, and they thought, you know, this Posnanski, I'm quoting him on this, but, you know, paraphrasing him, but, they, you know, he thought, you know, that they really thought, hey, this is a good trade, and then they were just vilified, you know, in the local media, and, you know, especially with them, from their fans for that trade. That's the kind of thing, they didn't float the trial balloon, and, you know, you do sometimes,
you
at least short-term.
For what?
Yeah. At least short-term, you pay a price for that from the standpoint of, now, this isn't something, I mean, we've always talked about how it used to be, you know, the Yankees traded to get so and so, and they gave up to get two prospects.
Right,
you have
the
name, and
in 1993 when the Yankees traded Marty Jansen and a couple other prospects for David Cone. Would there have been outrage?
But and the thing about it is back then it would have been David Cone traded for two minor leaguers,
and that's what it was.
You know, and that nowadays that's not the case anymore.
Right now,
if Roy Halladay is traded in the next couple of days, you're not going to see it listed as Roy Halladay traded to the Phillies or, you know, for three minor leaguers.
Right. And you also, honestly, if we were in 1997 and not 2007 a couple years ago, Phil Hughes would have gotten traded. He wouldn't be in the Yankees bullpen now, pitching as well as he has been pitching right now.
People know a lot more about the prospects, and because of that, I mean,
I think the teams do too.
Yes.
That's part of it. We just have more information in every way. And in some ways, I think that leads to the teams overvaluing their prospects. Not all the time,
but
sometimes they undervalue them. I mean, let's talk a little bit about that Royals trade. That's not the biggest trade that's gone on, but, you know, it was July 10th, Betancourt for Daniel Cortez and Derek Saito. We don't want to go too into it, but JJ, earlier that week, and you do the Royals' top prospects, where do we rank Daniel Cortez last year? Number three in their system?
And he would not, let me make clear, he would not be number three if we re-ranked right now.
But he would have been in the top 10. That's a bad organization. There's no other way to put it. That's just farm system.
He would have been somewhere probably around 8, 9, 10, yeah.
That farm system has had a brutal year. I talked to a scout about Daniel Cortez, who just seen him in the last 2 weeks right before that trade. I'm not sure if it was pre the public drunkenness arrest or post the public drunkenness arrest. That arrest certainly didn't help his cause. To me, this was a great case of the Mariners getting a high upside arm or two for a guy they didn't want anymore. Unesky Betancourt
right,
at the bench.
That's the thing. It's funny.
That's the issue to me.
The uproar from Royals fans has not been even necessarily giving up Cortez.
The amazing part to me.
But the uproar is, we're locked into this guy. We'll be seeing this guy play shortstop for our team for the next year and a half.
And honestly, that actually is the part that would not outrage me as much, because as bad as Unesky Betancourt is, he's better than Tony Pena Jr. He's better than what the Royals are running out there. Now, would I have given up Daniel Cortez for him? No. But I do think, in their minds, they paid a low price for an upgraded shortstop. And I guess that's my point.
But where Royals fans outrage. These aren't even my original ideas. I don't want to say they are because people thought them up before, right. Before I'm quoting them. But to paraphrase, the Royal fans say, well, that's how we got Mike Jacobs.
Yes, because it is.
It's like, hey, Mike Jacobs is better than Ross Gloed, who we put out there last year.
That's how they got their whole roster.
But you can't upgrade by saying, well, this guy's really bad, this guy would be better.
I agree. This guy's just bad as opposed to really
right,
bad.
Right, because, I mean, if you... To go with the Yankees' team's profile, their question they always ask, and hey, the Yankees are an entirely different situation from the Royals and many other teams, but the Yankees' question that kind of got profile going and all is this a guy who will help us be a championship level?
Is this a starter on a championship caliber team?
And if the answer is no,
then they didn't want him.
Then they didn't want him because their idea was is that, no, what we want to do is we're not going to say, well, this guy's better than this guy.
Right.
We're going to say, does he fit the profile of making us a championship-level club?
Which I think is the way, that's a better approach than
right.
what the Royals are doing.
And the thing about it is that, again, if you're the Yankees, you do have that benefit of saying, we can say that because, you know what? Well, we can eat this contract.
Right, exactly. Now, I do think the Cardinals, to get back to some of the more recent trades, I think the Cardinals kind of follow that approach closer to what the Yankees do. They are, and it's just kind of fascinating, right across the state there, right down I-70. The Cardinals, clearly it helps that they have Albert Pujols, the best player,
best player in
baseball.
Doesn't hurt.
And they have two pitchers who are just flat-out studs. As long as Chris Carpenter's healthy, he's a stud. And Adam Wainwright is a stud. And, you know, every time I talk about Braves pitching, I leave out Adam Wainwright, which is kind of silly. One of the prospects I've probably been more wrong on in the last 13 years than anybody. When he was in the Southern League, I thought he was a back-of-the-rotation guy. But he is just the definition of a front-of-the-rotation pitcher. He has got a couple of out-pitches. He pitches off his fastball. He keeps the ball in the ball. He's just awesome. Adam Wainwright, plus he's fun to watch. He pitches so aggressively. And so the Cardinals have these twin aces, and then the rest of it's Dave Duncan and Bailing Wire. Maybe that's overstating things a little bit, but Ryan Franklin is their closer.
Well, And the Royals have, I mean, the Cardinals have done good jobs of bailing wire at multiple positions over the years.
Absolutely. So. They're doing it, you know, they're giving a lot of playing time to guys like Skip Schumacher.
Skip Schumacher made a great play at second last night. It's like, what?
And I mean, Adam Kennedy's like the A's best hitter, and they gave him up for nothing, and they ate his contract. So the Cardinals aren't always right. I thought this was a bold move by St. Louis to go out and get Matt Holliday, another right-handed bat to put in their lineup right behind Pujols to give him some protection. In the lineup, whether you believe in it or not, I do think they actually needed another guy behind Pujols. But they gave up Brett Wallace, Clayton Mortensen, and Shane Peterson in that deal. JJ, what was your take on that trade?
I like it from the standpoint of, we're going to talk about this with several teams. Giving up prospects, I mean, that's the currency of all these trades.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a difference between, even if you give up a prospect who's pretty good, and Brett Wallace is pretty good.
Right.
But you look long-term with the Cardinals, Brett Wallace didn't have a future long-term with the Cardinals unless you believe that he's going to stick at third base.
And that's a little bit of a leap.
And that's a leap.
Out.
And that's a leap. And if not, well, he's not a better first baseman than the guy that you happen to have over there who's the best player in baseball.
That's it. I think Brett Wallace makes a lot of sense for Oakland because they'll move him to first.
They'll move him to first, which, by the way, they'll move him to first, which means long-term he probably replaces the guy that they picked up from the Cardinals to play first base. You know,
but
the thing about it is also being American League, if you need to, Brett Wallace also can just say, hey, we'll let you do what you do best, which is hit.
I think the great thing about this for Brett Wallace is he's a NorCal guy, played for
right,
NorCal baseball.
This works out.
So he's right back home.
But the
other two guys in my mind are guys that most organizations have. I like Clayton Mortensen, but he's a AAA right-hander right now. He has a little big league experience, and
the kind of guy that you, if you're the A's, you add him. Although it is hard to see long term how he's ever. You know, we talk about Brett Wallace being blocked in the Cardinals organization. Mortensen. He's got to pitch really well to ever make, you know, any kind of impact in Oakland because they have obviously a ton of young arms
pitching,
to sort through.
Pitching depth they've got. That has not been the issue for them. But Mortensen, you know, has been having a good year, and he was in the big leagues. But, you know, for the Cardinals, they traded. They also traded Jess Todd and Chris Perez, as it turned out, in that deal for Mark DeRosa. So for DeRosa and Holiday this year, they've given up their top hitting prospect in Brett Wallace, basically their top two pitching prospects in Todd and Mortensen, and then another interesting hitting prospect in Shane Peterson, plus their top closer prospect in Chris Perez. So that's five guys.
They're,
I'm pretty sure those guys are in all the top 15 coming into the year.
They're quite clearly making the push for, you know, hey, this is
2009, 2010, they're going for it. And, you know, maybe after that, maybe once Tony La Russa rides off in the sunset, maybe they try to retool. But they're not going to be a top 10 farm system next year.
But this is also the, hey, this is how the Cardinals.
That's how they rule.
That's how they've had success, too. I mean, you know, it's something where, yes, you trade away prospects, but you know what? They also had, hey, 5 years ago, they didn't have necessarily these prospects to trade.
That's right.
They didn't have a Brett Wallace to make. You know, they made moves, but I don't dislike it for the Cardinals from the standpoint of, yeah, okay, they gave up their number one prospect, but Brett Wallace was a trade chip for them, and their belief is that, okay, Matt Holiday will be the trade. You know, that was what they wanted to get back with the chip.
I thought it was a pretty good haul for Oakland, considering that Holiday's a free agent.
The only concern for Oakland is that, at some point, like, I mean, this is now essentially, we've seen this for now, what, 3 years of, okay, we're going to, you know, I don't fault it. I would much rather, if I'm a fan of a team, I would much rather see them kind of cash in, you know, cash in and say, okay, well, we're going to start playing for 2010 rather than kind of hang around and go, okay, well, we won 84 games.
Right.
Yay.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, there's nothing to be gained from that.
Unless you're in the National League Central, which means you win the division.
Yeah, I mean, that's like the Reds are now, what, 7 games under 500? Like, oh, we don't know if we're buyers or sellers.
Yeah,
and it's
exactly.
You know, they've got an outfield right now of, you know, basically two of their top three outfielders are out, and they've got an outfield of Harrison, Nix, Willie Taveras, and Johnny Gomes.
Yeah.
And, we don't know if we're buyers or sellers, you know, well, because you're in the NL Central.
Right.
But I think it much more makes sense to cash in. But that being said, you if you stay in that cycle, that's not a good thing.
Pirates.
That's not a good thing when you're saying every year, okay, well, let's cash in again. Because at some point, what that means is okay, well, these trades before, some of them clearly didn't work out for us. Clearly, if you're trading for Brett Wallace, Derek Barton has not worked out
correct.
Like you hoped he would when you traded for him.
That's correct. So it's a Baseball America podcast. He's J.J. Cooper. I'm John Manuel. You can send those questions in to us at podcast@baseballamerica.com. We do have an email question we'll get to later in the podcast. J.J., obviously, there have been a couple other deals. You know, Ryan Garko for Scott Barnes. I was happy for Garko, one of my favorite all-time players.
John Manuel fave.
Definitely on the short list of all-time John Manuel faves. So he goes back home to NorCal. Actually, he's an Orange County guy, Servite High, representing there. But he goes out there for Scott Barnes. I was a little surprised about that for Cleveland, and that to me they've got plenty of left-handed pitchers. I mean, really, don't they need to figure out who they like out of the Aaron Laffey, Jeremy Sowers, Scott Lewis? They've got Kelvin De La Cruz in the minor league. They got David Huff. They got plenty of left-handers. I was a little surprised that that's what they went after. But you know, if you're trading Garko, you get the best available prospect, and Scott Barnes is a pretty interesting prospect. We had Rafael Betancourt for Connor Graham. That's a nice deal, I thought, for Colorado. Connor Graham's a good piece, probably a bullpen guy, but, you know, might be a starter. So the Indians making a couple of solid moves, I thought. The Red Sox giving up two not top 30 type guys. I mean, Arjuna Diaz probably not going to be in their top 30 this year. He was having a bad year. The bat might preclude him from being
basically a glove guy who, you know.
But Hunter Strickland was on the ascendancy.
Yeah.
And now in his first start, I believe it was, for the Pirates, hit those seven no-hit innings and combined on a no-hitter.
And he's
interesting.
That being said, again, the Pirates are, the problem the Pirates have is that they've kind of reached the point where even if you're making moves that make logical sense from the standpoint of building your team, they seems like they've reached a point where those same moves hurt them with their fan base and hurt them with really the clubhouse, because the guys on the team are tired of, you know, of seeing this.
Yeah, I think they're in a perpetual loser loop of three now administrations making, and it's very difficult to see, for me, progress for the Pirates with the moves they've made since Neil Huntington came aboard.
And the thing about that being said, I don't think there's any one of these trades that they've made. You know,
I take it individually.
Right, take it individually. It's like, you know what? Adam LaRoche is not going to be a cornerstone.
More than likely, he's not.
That leads them back.
But I thought they didn't get enough in the Bay deal, for example. I think that was
right. That's the one that you go. Okay, did you? If you, because that was your
right.
That was your gold plated. You know, I mean, that was the 100,000 chip. I mean, that was.
And they've never gotten in any of these deals. They've never gotten an impact arm. The biggest impact arm they got was like Brian Morris, and he's injury prone, and he hasn't been very good since they got him. And that's, to me, the number one currency you have to get back in trades is impact arms. They're not getting impact, so I don't really like the deals they've made.
But also, that's the whole thing. We actually had a story go up on the site yesterday that made the point. It's so hard to trade for impact arms.
It is.
That really what you have to do, I mean, you can trade for impact bats. Like, hey, Brett Wallace probably won't end up being like the, you know, the premium, the A-level, you know, the...
Right.
Impact bat, but he could be.
He could be. I think he has unbelievable feel for hitting.
And you can trade for that. You can't trade if you get.
Have they got an impact bat? In any of these deals? I don't think they've got an impact anywhere. Hunter Strickland might be their best bet for an impact arm, and I don't see impact bats in any of the moves that the Pirates have gotten.
But that's me. Now, speaking of impact bats, this is something we want to, you know, as we record this, which will be going up on the site quickly so that we can get it up here before anything else happens. But Roy Halladay, I mean, you know, one of the rumors is, okay, you know, hey, is he going to go to the Phillies? And the rumor is that the Phillies are saying, hey, we can work out a trade here.
Right, the Phillies seem interested.
But we're not going to give you Drabek, impact arm, and we're not going to give you Dominic Brown. And again, these are rumors.
Right.
We'll know for sure one way or another.
They're certainly reported quite a bit.
Yes.
They're certainly out there.
And so the question becomes, okay, so what they're saying then is, well, we'll give you Michael Taylor.
Right.
We'll give you
Jason Donald,
Jay
Happ. Maybe Lou Larson, if you want those guys.
But we're not going to give you Drabek. We're not going to give you Brown.
Right.
First question is, okay, so by that, what they're saying is Phillies value Brown more than Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
Do you? I think I know how you ranked him. I think you agree, but do you agree with that?
Yeah, I do. Doing the Philly list last year, I wrote this in the chat. I think I've said this repeatedly. Those top seven prospects in last year's list, and J.A. Happ was eighth, so maybe I should have said top eight. You really could have ranked those guys any way you wanted to. I wound up putting Dominic Brown number one. I think the difference between Dominic Brown and Michael Taylor is thin. Michael Taylor is closer to being big league ready, but I think Dominic Brown does have more upside. I do believe in the power. The power's coming this year, 550 slugging, I think, in the Florida State League, despite a hand injury, a broken finger that he had this year. So, he's making us look good, which is great. I had Kyle Drabek ranked fifth, and the biggest reason for that was that he had the makeup issues in the past and the Tommy John surgery he was coming off of. But long term, who did I believe in more, him or Carlos Carrasco? Well, that was a really tough call. Probably Carlos Carrasco, because I thought more likely that Carlos Carrasco would be a starter. And there were a lot of rumblings within that organization that Kyle Drabek might come back and just end up being Brad Lidge's replacement and an elite closer. Which, if he was an elite closer, then you could still debate that. But the Carrasco, the big innings, the soft label that has followed him throughout his career was an issue. Right now, when you read the trade rumors, this makes sense to me. I've talked to scouts who've seen Trevor May this year. I've talked to scouts who've seen Jason Knapp this year. Those are the two best arms in their system beyond Drabek.
Mm-hmm.
That includes Carrasco, just in terms of pure arm.
Yeah, no,
now,
sure.
Knapp has had an erratic season. I know he slumped of late, but this is a guy who was in his first year in full season pro ball, has gone to low class A, and he was among the South Atlantic League leaders in strikeouts all year.
Knapp's the guy that you dream of.
If you make
the trade for him, he's the guy you dream of, that who is that guy that you look really smart as an organization by trading for, because it's like, okay, he's a long ways away.
Trevor Mays is more that guy.
You know, but with both of those guys, they're also the guys that you could look down the road and go, I mean, they're high risk, high reward.
Yeah, we banked on Trevor May, oy. You know,
yeah.
But May's the kid out of state of Washington who's at Lakewood and off to a great start there, and you know, kind of came on late. He was in extended spring training. I thought there was a scout who was at his first start and said, wow, he was just as good as what you wrote about in the handbook. He was at his best.
That being said, he also definitely has times where he has no idea where.
Oh yeah, no, the control's been an issue, and he throws. You know, he threw a big time power breaking ball in high school. It sounds like that's an erratic pitch for him. But he, you know, There
you
are times
on him.
There are times where he's, you know, 88, 92, and there are times where he's 92, 94, and he's a big boy, 6'5", 215 is where he's listed. He's a Pacific Northwest kid. So these are the guys who are in play with the Phillies. So a couple things here. First off, it does tell you what we wrote in the preseason. We ranked the Phillies 12th. We were probably a little conservative,
right,
although we ranked them.
If you look at them right now, I'd say they're a top 10 organization.
They're a top 10 organization, without a doubt. They might be a top 5 organization. Second of all, really, should Dominic Brown or Kyle Drabek preclude you from acquiring Roy Halladay? In my opinion, I would keep Drabek at all costs.
Because
he can
help you win this year, for one thing.
He could help you win this year, he could help you win next year, and he could be a future number one or number two starter.
And impact arms are the thing that's toughest.
Correct. I would include Dominic Brown. I would not let Dominic Brown be a deal breaker. If you could include Dominic Brown and even one of those low-A pitchers, if they say you don't want Carrasco, I would include either Knapp or May, and then the two other pieces, Jason Donald and something else. If that's what it took, I would make that move, because I think Roy Halladay is the difference between the Phillies being the best team in baseball or just, in my mind, still the favorite in the National League, Dodgers or no Dodgers. I think the Phillies are the best team in the National League. They're pitching better than their numbers look. They have that postseason success on their mind, you know, in their back pocket from last year. They have some mojo. They're doing what they're doing this year without Jimmy Rollins even having a very good year.
He's had a terrible year.
I like the Phillies. They're 19-5 this month, I believe it is. I think the Phillies are, even without Roy Halladay, they're the best team in the National League. But I think if they get Halladay for this year and next year, you're looking at a dynasty potentially. I mean, you really are looking at a potential dynasty with the Phillies, and you're just changing your whole organization forever between the team that never won and then a potential
and again,
dynasty.
The argument for like why you would include Brown, and you would also then be keeping Michael Taylor, who maybe you value Brown higher.
Right, but
you know what? You've got someone else who you can say there, okay, well, this guy can be our right fielder
absolutely.
Going forward.
Absolutely. And you know what? You found Jason Wirth on not the scrap heap, but as a big league free agent. You can find corner outfielders, and you can't find Kyle Drabek. So for me, and I love Dominic Brown, I don't think they can let Dominic Brown be the obstacle to this trade. Now, the other rumored team that's come in heavily at the end here, JJ, is the Red Sox. No big surprise. But supposedly one of the factors there is they won't give up Ryan Westmoreland. Now, the Red Sox are smart, and they know what they're doing, and their scouts are smart guys, and they scout heavily. So they don't just have one guy looking. They have multiple guys who will give them multiple looks to guys inside their system and outside their system. But doesn't that strike you as crazy that Ryan Westmoreland is the
right,
would be the holdup here?
When you heard that Clay Buchholz was the holdup, that's
like, okay. Big league ready
impact
guy
arm.
With impact arm, big league ready, all the things.
Although
you
I although again, if I'm trading him in the division, if I'm trading Halladay in the division, if I'm the Blue Jays, I have to get Buchholz back.
I agree.
You know, like that, like you.
Yeah, Masterson and Bose are not good enough.
There is a higher price. You know, there is an
AL
surcharge.
I agree.
I mean, that of like, look, we're gonna every time he comes here and shoves it against us, we're gonna have our fans booing us. So we better get something back.
I would not want to be pelted with loonies at every one of his starts. So yes, that would be frustrating. But Ryan Westmoreland, as talented and as athletic as he is, he's in Lowell. He's in short season. I mean, I'm sorry, I don't care how good the guy is. If you can get Ryan, if you can't let Ryan Westmoreland stand in the way of Roy Halladay, can
you? You couldn't argue anything different. If you're arguing that you can't let Dominic Brown get in the way, you definitely can't argue that you can let Ryan Westmoreland get in the way.
So that really vexes me. I think that is shocking. That can't be true.
But the thing that baffles me, though, is from the standpoint, not baffles, because I understand this would make them a better team. But the Red Sox are a team out there. Like, if there's a team that I could point to and say, you know, they could be fine without this.
Yeah.
The Red Sox, you know, they're the team.
Because
it's like, they don't need, the Phillies, you could argue, need it because it's like, okay, when you get to the postseason,
right,
you're saying, who's our top three?
Hey, Cole Hamels is a little fatigued. He's pitched fatigued this year. Sometimes he's good, sometimes he's not. The fastball life has not been there for him this year like it was last year.
So you could say, okay, they need him from the standpoint of when you get to your top three pitchers come postseason, that makes it a whole lot better.
Except for Hamels, I mean, who is their number two right now? J-Hap.
And J-Hap, I am not knocking J-Hap.
He's had a great year.
He's had a great year.
Pitching off the fastball.
That being said, J-Hap's the guy that you do not worry about, but if he's your number two come postseason,
right, Which I don't know if he is. I mean, I think they might have Joe Bland as their number two guy, or Jamie Moyer.
Right.
But either way, these are not great choices. Roy Halladay is better than all those guys.
Right. Whereas with the Red Sox, again, if they just get healthy, which, you know, you look at the Red Sox.
Still a big if.
But it's still a big if. But you look at the Red Sox, and there is that whole, you know, okay, well, you know, well, Josh Beckett is that guy to kind of.
Correct. And if he's not, John Lester is.
Right. So you've got 1-2. Yeah. And so, you know, to make him, you know, so you have three of those guys is not overkill, but it's not as necessary as it is for some other teams.
Correct. It's almost like Boston saying, look, we can't do enough to improve our offense right now. We're tied into J.D. Drew. He's having a horrible year. What a shock. J.D. Drew having a bad year in the midst of a multi-year overpaid contract. Who saw that coming? Sorry. My J.D. Drew enmity is deep. It runs deep over the course of my entire 13 years of BA. But, yeah, it's very strange to me that the one team I wish that would get in on the Halladay thing, it is strange to me that the Red Sox would be in that. It's even stranger they'd let Ryan Westmoreland stand in the way. And the team I wish would get in the Roy Halladay sweepstakes would be Colorado. He's a Colorado native. The Rockies are in the National League wild card mix very strongly. They could always use pitching. I think the Rockies with a Halladay, Ubaldo Jimenez, Aaron Cook rotation, that would be dangerous. I wouldn't want to face them in the postseason. And I think they have enough to get to the postseason. Maybe they won't catch the Dodgers. That's the problem. What would they give up, number one? And number two, what would it take for them? And would they even have a chance to keep Roy Halladay? Would Roy Halladay pitch at Coors for a year and a half? And
right.
Be like, man, it's awesome to pitch in the state of Colorado.
You say that. I mean, that trade could also be something where Roy Halladay just basically shoots it down before it ever happens. Like, I know it's home.
Oh, come on. He's got to go home. That would be. I would love that storyline. I just think that would be a phenomenal storyline.
But speaking of Westmoreland,
yes.
We also have a question about.
We do. We do have a question about. Rodrigo Lopez is the other guy right now in the Phillies rotation. Right now, he's made four starts, and he's 3-0, 309, so maybe he's your number two playoff starter. That's awesome. Joe Lacate, of course, coming through for us. Another
we always can count on Joe.
We can. And thoughts on Ryan Westmoreland so far this year? How impressive is it that he's performed this well out of the gate, given major shoulder surgery last year? Ellsbury with more power, a fair comparison. And then Kyle Skipworth, what the heck is going on? Does he need to move out from behind the plate to concentrate on his best tool with that? JJ, I think it is impressive that Westmoreland is doing what he's doing, with this. I mean, this is a really athletic guy. This is a guy who could have played Division I football, would have started as a freshman, at least as a punter. There's a reason the Red Sox gave him this kind of money, and we know that Vanderbilt was devastated when they lost Ryan Westmoreland, recruiting-wise. The Red Sox top 10 from last year is actually looking pretty good. I mean, Nick Hagedorn's having a huge year this year. His stuff has been tremendous. All our reports on Nick Hagedorn are just glowing. Daniel Barr's had a great year, graduated the big leagues, pitching very well in middle relief there. And yet I think Westmoreland, with the down year that Lars Anderson's having, just solid year by Josh Reddick, but I think that Westmoreland's more athletic than Reddick. He's probably their top position player prospect right now.
Yeah, and then you mentioned Casey Kelly, who's had...
Oh, yeah. He might be their top position player prospect.
the problem is he's actually a better pitching prospect.
That's right.
But, yeah, that's... And throw a guy who's coming a little bit from outside of it, ex-Carolina catcher.
Tim Fedorovich.
He's
in their mix for being in their top 10. There's no doubt. We've had great reports on Tim Fedorovich this year, both the catching and the throwing.
Now, speaking of, on the other hand, not-so-good reports, Kyle Skipworth... The high school catchers, I mean, it used to be the mantra was, the thing to avoid in the draft more than anything else is high school catchers.
Yeah.
And that's somewhat lessened, or there's been actually some success stories.
Yeah, when you have Joe Mauer and Brian McCann in the big leagues, that does tend to,
but
maybe that changes some minds.
But what happens, and the funny thing is the Skipworth fits the profile of the high school catcher who has succeeded. What happens is that the high school, I think there's still a safe argument that the exceptional defense high school catcher is a fool's bet in the first round because the problem is that there's no other position out there, not even shortstop, where guys get drafted in the first round because of their defense.
Right.
And the problem is that if you don't have a first round bat as a high school catcher, the bat very rarely figures it out.
That's the hardest position where for it to come on. And I just, it is surprising that Skipworth, this is a guy who had 18 straight at bats with a hit in
right.
high school.
The thing about this is that Skipworth, though, fit the profile of a guy who hit mm-hmm. well enough to be a first round pick, who, by the way, could catch.
Right, exactly.
And he wasn't the other way around.
Right, the catching tools were a little raw. But that was expected to be the part that was going to be harder to
right,
come
and
on.
You can, you know what, and
that's
the thing about it is that with the catching, you could have a raw high school catcher from the standpoint of, you know, oh, he's poor receiving,
right,
you know,
right.
he stabs at the ball, he doesn't move well behind
right.
the plate, his mechanics are off on throw. All those things are things you say, okay, are the tools there, we can work with that, we've got 3, 4, 5 years to get
right.
him to that point. The thing that's baffling with Skipworth is that the bat tool has just not played what we expected.
And he's playing at one of the most offensive ballparks in low class A in Greensboro in the South Atlantic League. It's 87 strikeouts, so there's a significant contact issue. He's hitting a soft 205. You know, he didn't hit last year in the Gulf Coast League either.
And the reports that we've heard, I mean, are not something where you say, oh, you know, he's this close.
Yeah,
no one's saying, oh, he's this close to figuring it out.
And like there's a slow pull going on there, and that's a real problem, is that the bat speed, it's just all not there. It's all out of sync. And the Marlins are pretty good at scouting Southern California. The year before, in 2007, they went to that well for Matt Dominguez and Mike Stanton. You know, that's
working
out
pretty
well for him, exactly. 2008, they go back to that well in Southern California with Kyle Skipworth. I mean, they were pretty confident in that pick, and I think that was an industry consensus, like, hey, good job, good pick. You know, I think a lot of teams would have taken Kyle Skipworth at 6 last year. So it is vexing. We haven't heard any good scouting reports on anything this year. So I think, Joe, my answer would be you just try to chalk it up to first year in pro ball, growing pains, try to get this guy to instructional league and try to flush it, basically, and get him in some better habits so that you can build on, start over, really, next year.
I'm going to play both sides of the fence here, which we were writing up when Brandon Allen was our number one prospect for the hot sheet last week. Not number one prospect, but number one on the hot sheet. And looking at Brandon Allen's career, it's fascinating. His first year in low A, he was about as bad as a prospect could be. And it is a good reminder, don't write a guy off after a bad year. That being said, what Skipworth this year is very similar to what we heard another high school drafter catch.
Yeah,
Devin Mesoraco last year in Midwest League. And the thought was, okay, you downgrade him, but don't give up on a guy, especially a catcher, after one bad year. And the reality is you know, you don't completely give up on Mesoraco by any stretch here. He's still a young guy. He's in high A.
Right.
You know,
and
but
athleticism was a big part of his package.
But we haven't seen, you know, it hasn't been something where, oh, it clicked in year two.
There hasn't been a ton of flashes with Mesoraco. He showed a little bit of power, but that's about
it. But so it is like on both sides, you know, don't write off a guy after 1 year because a guy can have a bad year. I mean, yeah, better example. I'm sorry, it's 2 Reds in a row, but you know, being on the Reds list, Joey Votto had a really bad year in the Florida State League.
Yeah, he did.
And then, you know, but don't write him off from that. He's now, you know, one of the better hitters in the National League.
Yeah, I think he'd be a second in the National League or first, two or three if he had enough at bat.
I was listening to the game last night where they made the point. He was going in last night. He was 29 plate appearances away from qualifying. If he went 0-29, he'd be 11th in the league. So
yeah, he's having a great year.
You don't write off the guys after a bad year, but at the same time, going into next year, Kyle Skipworth falls in the category of still got a chance. But got to prove something.
Correct.
He's like you put that Marlins top 10 together. I don't know if he's in that, especially in that system where you have guys like Stanton, Dominguez, and several others.
No, they have other options. So Joe, thanks as always for the great question. The email address is podcast@baseballamerica.com. Obviously, the trade deadline is this Friday, so we'll have coverage at baseballamerica.com. You can follow all the updates on our Twitter feed. And next week we'll be back with another podcast to analyze the trades and rank the prospects who got traded and fill you in on all those guys if you haven't already been filled in. So for JJ Cooper, I'm John Manuel. We'll see you next week on the Baseball America podcast. So long, everybody.